Yeah, thank you very much. Exactly, so I want to talk about KIM, so communication in the medical infrastructure, what exactly it is, if it's just communication or chaos, you can decide. And who are we? I'm Christoph, I'm a postdoc and security researcher in Münster. And my topics are security and security in medicine, and I promoted and I worked in this area, and Sebastian is a professor at Fachhochschule Münster and also works in crypto. Yeah, as announced, I brought something from a real-life example. What are we doing in the medical field? How are we sending doctor's notes? So this is from November, it's really recent, and this is a good version. Very often we just get emails, there's no encryption, there's nothing, it's just an email, and then the complete file, all the data from the patient, because they're coming to us. So when you are getting a credit card or something, and a digital card, you can get a PIN a few days later, so it's secure. And this is the same procedure. So there are two emails, one is with the data encrypted and one is with the password, and I didn't blur it out because that's just a date. Very often it's the last name or just keywords like the doctor's name, the kind of doctor it is. And this is not what the doctors came up with, because obviously that would also not be the job of the doctor. They should handle health, but they have instructions how to handle this, and I brought one. This is an official instruction from the Dentist Association in 2019, and they told people to do it like we just saw, two emails. So it's basically two-factor, because it's two different mails, right? It should be safe. What can go wrong? Yeah. So this is the past and also our present, and that's not what we want to have. We want to get away from that. Germany wants to get away from that. And so we have the Gematik Infrastructure Organization. We presented that on an earlier Congress, just a short introduction here. So they specify how secure it has to be, where it runs, what kind of servers we need. So the whole infrastructure is defined and run by the Gematik. And on the left, we have the IT systems, doctors and healers, basically, and that's what it's all about. That's what we do it for. They are then connected to the so-called connector. It's kind of a VPN connection, like a router. And then we have different services. We have a time server. We have all the different services we need. And one of them, as in the title, we want to talk about more closely. And we have a short video about it as well. A completely normal ECG note. And we can just send it. But is it really that simple? Well, we have to write it, we have to print it, we have to hand it over. With the KIM, the communication and medical area, the whole transmission can be done electronically. And we can do it in all the medical fields together. To use KIM, you need a special email address. You need a certified certified KIM provider, then you use your what kind of you choose what kind of doctor you are, and you use that, and you're done. KIM encrypts all the data and the emails, and only the correct recipient can open it. They can also answer and ask questions. If data is available electronically, it's easily available to all the doctor's offices.
Neben Arztbriefen verschicken sie auch Labor- oder
radiologische Along with doctor's notes, also lab works and all the other information can be sent using KIM.
Oder der Heil- und Kostenplan gelangen mit KIM direkt an die
Plans for future medical treatments
noch weitere Nutzergruppen.
And other data, all that can be sent.
Vertrauliches, KIM, schnell und sicher
if it needs to be trusted and also fast.
Genau. So viel zur
exactly.
Ja, Aussage, wie es sein sollte. Tatsächlich
so, how it should work. And actually, KIM is not too bad, we are using it as well. It's getting more and more distributed.
Es ist leider nicht
well, more and more people use it.
Wurde per einen Klick und schon ist alles zugeordnet.
And technically, it should be just one click and then it should work. It really depends on the doctor's office. Sometimes you have to restart it. But basically, it is a system that can be used today. And we have 212 million emails sent using the system, so it is working, but not as well as you might expect or hope. And to just give an overview what we are using, I hand over to Sebastian. So yeah, they are making it secure. And when the German local governments or offices say, yeah, we want to make it secure, well, how do they do that? The people who made KIM, they made it better. They didn't start by building their own thing, but they were using standards. They are using S/MIME, to be exact, and who hasn't heard of it? Most people here might have email encryption using PGP, and so it's kind of like a sibling to that. It's a bit more easy. Crypto is similar, and I brought an email where we are using S/MIME a lot, and in Apple it looks like this. So it's signed, it's encrypted, and that's all with the already installed software. Nothing has to be added. So Thunderbird, Outlook, all the normal programs should work with this out of the box. It enables digital signatures, modern encryption, it's in pretty much all the mail clients, and it's rather easy to use. If you want to try it out, there is one thing you have to do that's a bit difficult. You need to buy an X509 certificate. There are clients without end. You could create your own certificate, but then there is this annoying warning, and with S/MIME you, just like other certificates that are self-created, there are annoying warnings, and per year it's like $15. And this is the certificate I have in Münster. So for the telematic infrastructure, there are a few CAs, so certificate authorities. So the link is in the PDF that will be online later. And those CAs are certified for KIM. And I have to add, those are not the normal CAs where you would normally get a certificate. But this infrastructure for KIM, it's its own thing. And they are not necessarily the same as other CAs. But that's not too bad. So what is the cryptographic message syntax? That's pretty much the standard that emails are sent nowadays and can be encrypted nowadays. So this is the same mail that I showed earlier, just the source code. Here are the email headers in the beginning, and down here that's the ciphertext, so the encrypted text. And the signature is in there as well. First, it uses sign, then encrypt, and that will be important later. So if you have a message that can be encrypted and signed, it's first signed, and then the signature and the text is then encrypted. So you have to decrypt before you can check the signature. So those are the basics of S/MIME, and that they are using it at all, well, they did it quite well, has to be said. But there was something about S/MIME, right? Yeah, some 4 years ago, 4 to 5 years, I was standing here at CCC, that was in Leipzig back then, and I was talking about the E-field, E-fail issues. So we basically broke the encryption of MIME, S/MIME. In specific circumstances, we could break it. The community behind S/MIME were quite professional. They brought a new version, but they fixed all of that. So, as I showed before, Kim uses an older version, so they might be susceptible to this fail, but they were quite clever. So they were using a lot of different standards and combined them. So they were never susceptible to e-fail, so they did that well, it has to be said. 1 year later, we published a paper about how to maybe fake those signatures in S/MIME, and we will have to talk about that today. Especially the digital signatures, I think we found something that's not fixed yet. And we published this paper a few years ago, and there we tried to construct an email that looks to the receiving party as if it was signed, even though it isn't. And this is one of the examples we have in our paper, and it's completely fake. It looks like it's signed. Who knows Phil Zimmerman? That's the one who made PGP. In the 90s, he invented it. And we took one public email from him. There was some text in there with a digital signature. And just so you can understand how we tricked it, we took that email from back then, from the 90s, with a digital signature, and we inserted an HTML body that covers up the original content and shows our own content, and then Johnny, You Are Fired, that's the title of our paper as well. So it looks like Philip Zimmerman sent this email. So it's basically a switch, bait and switch. So it's a very small trick, but it can be overwritten and be faked. So how is S/MIME integrated into KIM? We have a doctor's office, and we have two doctor's offices here, one on the one upper and one lower, and the upper one wants to send a message to the lower one. So we have a sender, recipient, then the registration number, subject message, and so on. And the client, that can be an Apple Mail, Thunderbird, Outlook, whatever. Something that writes SMTP. And that sends it to the client module. And that's a piece of software that's installed on a small server inside the doctor's office. It doesn't do much. It takes this message and puts a wrapper around it and puts it into an email structure. From here it gets interesting. The TI connector enters, and it's a connector you have to buy as a doctor's office, and that's inside the TI VPN later, and that adds the signature and encrypts the message. Once that happened, VPN von der TI. So, as we said, the TI connector is part of the VPN, and that's then sent via SMTP to the SMTP server of the telematics infrastructure, and that's then collected by the TI connector of the receiving doctor's office using POP3. It then enters the client module of the receiving office. They check the signature, decrypted obviously, and if everything went well, they have the clear text message. So it's not end-to-end per se, it's not really encrypted by the sender, but the TI connector does the encryption. It's not too bad, we want to complain too much.
Sie sehen, wir fangen jetzt direkt hardcore in die Probleme hier mit rein.
You see, we're going straight at the core of the matter. This is the T-Systems client module that we looked at when we did the initial analysis. We had about 2 years to look into it since the last CCC, and we got access to the client module at a dentist's office that we know, and this client module gets the email in clear text. So the system that they use in the doctor's office to administrate the patients sends it clear text to that client module, and the client module then takes care of the encryption. And this works via SOAP requests, and we looked at the logs for the client module, and you see this is base64 text, which represents the clear text of the email, so it sees it plainly. And the same on the other side, so on the receiving end, it's received by the connector, then deciphered, and then you have plain text that is sent to their server or to their client. So there is also something like manage KIM, that means they have logs in the data center where this is running, and it poses a problem if you think about data privacy issues, for example, when there's for example a requirement to delete anything after 10 years in Germany if you have sensitive client data, and it's basically out of your hand if it's in the cloud, if the provider, this managed service is in the cloud and you don't have the logs anymore. So clearly that should happen, and we believe sensitive data shouldn't be part of these log files, but in this T-Systems client module this happened obviously. So just one small note, how does that develop, and there's an open specification, you can write a client for that, and then you need to have that module certified or verified, and there's a whole list of requirements that you need to fulfill, and then you also need to sign a few declarations that you swear to, and then there are tests that the Gematik, so this organization, has to check for, and one of these requirements is that you have a separate test case of the Gematik, and technically the Gematik should have seen this when they did the tests. So small hint, you just need to check the press release by them back then. And they say the attacker couldn't use it because it would have to be deciphered by them. And yeah, as you can see, it's Base64. How could you read that? That's clearly impossible. So, as most of you probably know, Base64 is not an encryption. It's obviously clear text. It's just a little bit obfuscated for different reasons, but you can decipher it easily. So this was just one of the problems that we saw with that module. And the other stuff that we saw was there was this log4j issues that a lot of you probably remember. End of 2021 is a library for Java that does logging work. You can use it to write your logs, and this was used by the T-Systems client module, and there was an issue in that library. In short, it means if the attacker is able to push a text of his or her choice to the client then they can have a remote code execution, so it's being run with the permission of the client that processes it. So this happened with a lot of programs. This is was a worldwide problem, and this is not something we can fault them for. But the tricky or the bad part happened later, when how they dealt with the issue. And if they had to update the certificate, and if I send them something, if I send something to those doctor's offices, I need to send them a certificate. And the problem is that you send it with what you transmit, and then you can basically send them anything. And here we basically put the malicious code that we wanted to use into the common name in the certificate, and this is being logged in the log, and then obviously you trigger the vulnerability. So the server is on the internet on the left, and you can see those 3 bytes that we sent, and this means that our client tried to connect to that server that we set up, so we could have put in remote code, we could have gained administrative privileges, because most of these tools run as administrators or super users on the client side, on the doctor's office side. So I'm only allowed to use that with the specific dentist office that we have between Friday and Sunday, or Friday and Sunday, where they don't use it, and obviously I shouldn't break it. I shouldn't break it, because otherwise they can't work the next week. But interestingly enough, you cannot see that email yet. So it's enough if the email is received. You don't even have to open it. As long as the client module gets the email and processes it, that's game over. So there's no amount of user discretion you can take, in the sense that if they see that it's malicious and it looks fishy and they don't click on it, that doesn't help. This obviously can happen to any program. This happened to a lot of them. And to be honest, T-Systems was very quick about patching it, but they did it silently and they didn't tell anyone. And normally you have to log into a portal, you can download an executable file, and then you execute it, and then it's being installed. But no one told the doctor's offices, and they didn't release patch notes, they didn't know anything about it, they didn't give a press release. So the only thing you can do is you can compare the version strings between the one that is installed and the one that's distributed on the internet, and if it's a bigger number, then you know that it's just being updated. And they didn't do it because the customer is required by contract to do regular updates, and that's why they didn't. That's why they claim they didn't notify anyone of the release. And as you know, no one does that. That's just bullshit. So. So the third problem that we found was, we already told you that Kim uses the send and encrypt, and as you already saw, it's not encrypted end-to-end, so from the one computer in the doctor's office to the one in the others. There is always, or there are these men in the middle, more or less, from the Kim system, and they need to verify. The question is, how does this information that the signature is valid to the mail client from that that client module? And so the client module has to add defined hints in the email text that you add at the end. So it needs to be in the same format that the email already uses. So it could be either text HTML or text plain. So it always adds something like this at the bottom. It's just a clear text email that's being added to the footer, and it says this message was successfully decrypted. The check for the signature basically said that the message was being manipulated. So also da ist bad pun about doctors.
Hat die Mail in irgendeiner Weise verifiziert, sondern hat sie manipuliert.
The client module didn't just check it, but also manipulate the email. So this is the source code of that email. So you can see this is the top part are the headers, then you have the HTML for the email. So then we leave a bit of space, and then on the bottom you see the footers that are being added by the client module. And now, if you then add a little bit of HTML into that email, for example, we add the same footers that the client module would, and we say, okay, this was being decrypted and was successfully checked. So it looks exactly or very similar, obviously, but with different tests. So we can remove that stuff, but it's being hidden by this special footer that we put in there. So you can just hide the original or the actual check by the client module and just add your own that looks like it. And there is a PDF that is being added with the complete check for this. And if they really want to know, they can click on it and then you see it right at the top, and we can't check or we can't change that. But no one actually reads that, so there's really no point to this. So yeah, actually, he's protesting because his dentist's office actually does that, and we have to give them credit for that. But the idea is that you can actually also add more attachments to the email. So you can just add another attachment that has the same name, and then you can continue that game until to no end. So now come back to these little tricks that we showed you here. They work because we don't check the signature not on the device that is being used at the end, but rather somewhere in the middle, then you need to attach that information, and then that's a bad idea, because as you see, you can then you can spoof it.
Everything was said very well to the systems. In March 2020, they made an information campaign that it was updated, which was nice. It was on the website. And every praxis got an email that they should update. In April, they sent another email that the configuration has to be changed. At the same time, we asked our technicians how it is with our clients, and we can see here 40% have done the update. So half a year later, 60% still haven't had that. They are still very vulnerable to that. The problem is that it costs money, and the technician wants money too. So you have a lot of work related to that. A lot of offices don't want to do that because it's related to a lot of work and money. In September 2022, they have made a specifications hotfix to that issue. Well, putting something next to it, it is very easily manipulable. So they added a new feature: if the signature checking was false, they instantly deleted. So if the signature is not officially valid, they instantly delete it, and you have to look yourself. If it is invalid, what should we do with negative the pictures that you got from your doctor. That's still an issue having to be fixed. At the end of 22, they have deleted every of those notices. You have to go to archive.org to still look at it, but on the official site, it's not there anymore. That was the client module. Now a few things that we made this year, and we have to go back into the theory. We have added the LLAB. The LLAB directory is kind of like the address book for the whole thing. You can look for dentist's office or doctor's office in those address books, and that looks on the client for those. They sent back the S-MIME certificate, so the client module knows that that is valid. But how do we generate those keys? The doctors get like a smart card with those keys. With health insurance providers, they have a lot more emails, so they don't just get a physical key, but they get something else. A lot of doctor's offices have like the digital sick notice. Is also connected to that. They get a KIM certificate now, and instead of the three papers that you used to get, and the insurance provider now just gets the KIM certificate from the sick notice and not the paper version. They have a lot of certificates that are defined, and we see that as okay right now.
Und der wird dann signiert von dem sogenannten Trust Service Provider, das ist ja diese CA.
And it will get signed by the service provider.
Die müssen das natürlich dann signieren. Wenn das alles fertig ist, dann wird das Ganze in das Adressbuch hochgeladen. Also
if all of that is done, it gets put into the address book that we talked about earlier. So the email address is in there when it was when the certificate was made, and down there we have the certificates. We have two. We just set it up, so a lot of cryptographical algorithms. That's all in there. Everything has to be specified for us and the service providers, and they also have to do and they have to check every new key that is coming in. Every cryptographic thing has to be checked. And we wanted to see if we find weak keys. And I have very good connections to that LDAP. So I just downloaded a few, and we're gonna look at a few of those. We're gonna open two of those certificates, and they're from insurance providers. You're not seeing them right now? Now you are.
You can see here. Those are two different insurance companies. I crossed out a few things. You can see when they were created. So 1st of September in 2021. Around 9 o'clock, this is the public key, okay, 2048-bit RSA key, so right, is anybody already picking up something. Did she get the scent? What I'm gonna solve, this is the modulus is the same. So both of these insurance providers, I went through it bit for bit, they're exactly the same. So that means also the private key for both of them is the same. So you have two different insurance providers who one for one use exactly the same key. This is obviously the worst case that can happen in a public key infrastructure. And that means that members of one organization can read all of the data that is meant or sent to the other organization. This is exactly what shouldn't happen and did. But yeah, two identical keys in the same PKI in the telematic infrastructure. Okay, unfortunately, that wasn't the only case. We found 8 different insurance companies where that was the case. There were 2 groups with 3 providers and then another group where it was 5 with the same keys. And what's happening in the background is there are 2 different IT providers that made the same mistake. They independently you made the same mistake of using the same key for multiple insurance providers. And the problem is, it's, it doesn't sound like an awful loss. With 8, there are hundreds of them in Germany. But the problem is, those are the really big ones. This was more than a quarter of all the insured people in Germany. So that's crazy. And it obviously contradicts the concept of end-to-end security. This is exactly what shouldn't happen. If I have a private key, then I should be the only one who is able to decrypt what's being sent to me and not anybody else. And reversely, they need to sign a lot of things, like if they give you like a treatment plan or something that is then being signed, so it's clear that it's coming from them and it's digitally signed. And then you as a doctor know, okay, I'm going to get the money if I start treating them. And this is also not a given now, because one insurance company could fake it and sign out all of these plans for another company. Obviously, just in theory right now, there are also a few other measures that you have to overcome in order to get to that point, but in practice, it's not quite as simple as it sounds, but it's definitely an issue, and it's in theory you could do that. So, and as you saw, they were created in September of 2021. This is not a coincidence, because that's when the EAU was started. That's basically a doctor's note that you can receive and send electronically, and that's when all of these doctor's notes needed to be provided electronically to the insurance providers. And remember, this basically a doctor's notes for more than a quarter of the population were affected by this problem. So probably probably hundreds of millions, to be honest. So the question is, what happened? How is it possible that this happens? And also, we don't know the details, obviously. I don't have any contact with the guys who implemented it, but what they did is they had the same HSM instance, and they used it for more than one customer, and so they pressed the button, and one of the buttons is create the key material, and the second one is create a certificate for this key. So someone said create the key material, and then they just press generate certificate and forgot to press the first button again to create a new key. And it's very questionable why they did that, how they don't have any check against this, why this isn't done by software and so on and so on. It's a bit questionable, the service that they provide. So what we do, we notified them, we did disclosure, and that the key distribution obviously needs to be fixed. The keys were revoked, they were regenerated, and there was another change to the spec, so the CAs need to check them against the old keys now. When there's a new key that they, or a new certificate that they sign, they need to check that it doesn't work with any of the old keys, or the old, that there's no overlap. And it shouldn't just check for weak keys, but also that it's not the same identity behind it. So the Gematik is also now doing checking on that every month to see that there are no duplicates in there. So what did we see today? There is sensitive data in the client module log data. It might even be in the cloud in a server somewhere that you don't know outside of the doctor's office. We found the Log4j vulnerability in the KIM client. It was acceptable, but the handling of the patching was a problem, really, as we said before. And just for checking before the talk, I logged into the portal again, wanted to see if there was a change, and I already found a newer version that I didn't know about. There was no release notes, no patch notes, nothing. We also saw that the forging of digital signatures was possible in KIM, and now you saw that there was a possibility to have the same key used for multiple certificates. And thank you for that, for your attention, and that's when we head over to the Q&A.
Ja, danke schön. Ja, jetzt geht's. Okay, ja, danke schön.
Yeah, thank you.
Wir haben wieder vier Mikrofone für
Fragen. We have four microphones for questions.
Das Internet hat eine Frage.
Also, there's a question from the Internet. Let's start with that.
Jawohl.
The question is, why is it allowed for the doctor's offices to have control over the updates, and shouldn't it be that they are forced to install updates and the cost should be on the telematic provider?
Very good question. Telematic infrastructure is made out of a lot of different institutes and people that are doing different things and want different things in there. We have Gematik, we have the doctor group, and they have all different needs for that. But the question is, who will pay for it? And no one knows how to answer that question. And to making them mandatory, our technology in Germany is not set to the same standard. So doing that is also the thing. And how do the doctor offices know that there is an update? We or the Gematik is going to that.
Okay, microphone four.
Especially with the connector providers, there is an offer for the offices to use
a different kind of hardware, so all the hardware would be collected, and then there would be a VPN connection to the doctor's office. Do you know about that? Do you have any ideas how that works? Especially with the clear text communication to the connector, that would be fatal.
So the data between client module and the client is going through encoding, so there's no problem. TSL encryption through the keys and certificates, and we think that is pretty safe, and our goal is to never let it leave the office without the certification and the encoding. So we think it's a little redundant to make an extra VPN for that. But it could be maybe like Übergangslösung. We have that in our eyes. Thank you.
I didn't fully get it. Did T-Systems patch the client because you notified them or because they noticed that Log4j is an issue for them and you just found a window where it was possible? And secondly, that was T-Systems. There are a lot of other clients. Do you assume or would you say that Log4j is an issue for others and is, still is? Or did the Gematik notify others that they should check? And thirdly, do you need data? So do you need more data from other other offices?
Okay, so I didn't write that. Question one, T-Systems was patched all by themselves. I started in January, and I'm still looking at that every now and then, and it wasn't patched. So I asked myself, why not look? But they patched it themselves, but they didn't made it public that they patched it. Question two, the other clients were hit by that, but we looked what versions have that, and we're still looking that everything has to be updated regularly. Other clients do that more offensively, so checking that they're safe. Question three, donations, yes, single things, of course, sure. Reconstruction is something we always look for.
Vielleicht noch mal dazu, auch was man da misst und so. Ich meine, wir hätten 600.000 Mailadressen von den Praxen und könnten dann Log4Shell Exploits hinschicken, aber...
Okay, other question. What is it that... what kind of data is interesting? Because we have lists and we... Yeah, we could check just the T-Systems. It's not many thousand. We could just send it to all the T-Systems customers and just test it, just pen testing and test it in productive system, but no.
Yeah, so, hi. I'm not really sure how it's made with the certificates. Is there a location mechanism, or does Gematik switch that with any...
There is the OSSP responder and location list, so it's kind of both, and the LDAP, of course. So there are two mechanisms. And the certificates really are gone now, and that's how you do it.
My question is, same region. Thank you for your talk, but how did you look at the PKI? Was it a hard fail, soft fail? Where is it going? What is with the collectors? Is it just kind of switched out, or the certificates have a lifespan of 2 to 5 years? Maybe they're closed. It's cryptographic, very loose. So I see a bit of...
Hi, Dirk. So there might be an issue there. First of all, hi Dirk. So we are looking at the PKI at the moment, and let's have a beer.
Okay. Oder zwei.
Or maybe two.
Gerne.
Okay, danke. Gut, wir gehen nochmal zum Mikrofon Nummer zwei, bitteschön.
Ja. Ihr habt jetzt, also bei fast allen Fachstellen...
You said to almost every issue that there was T-Systems in there. Is that a coincidence or is T-Systems very fraudulent?
It's not an accident, but it's also nothing special there. It's just the access that I have. I have access from 8 p.m. on a Friday to Sunday, and then that's T-Systems.
But there...
And I'm also aware not allowed to say anything more.
Maybe I didn't listen properly. Thank you, by the way, for the talk. But it did leave a very bad taste on my tongue. The endpoints are still encrypted, and the information is still on the computers in the offices. So we're not looking to a safer infrastructure, but if the office is
what?
So if they're not encrypted, are they instantly open source?
Yeah, so that's within the client module, and it's clear text there. So it's not like when every opening you have to decrypt it, and how it could be in Outlook. At a doctor's office, yes, it is clear text there. But we can argue if that's a good thing or not, but we can compare it to other sensitive data, and that also is in clear text on some server. Of course, whenever it's used and viewed, it has to be in clear text. And then in the doctor's office, it's next to the database with the medical data.
Just look on every table in a doctor's office and look at that. So. Thank you for your talk. Two quick questions. Why has CAs been crossed out?
I did that. So the CA certificate just went out of date, and that's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's they were a CA, and right now they don't have a valid certificate. So they were, so we mentioned them, but they are not right now, so it's crossed out. It's not important, not good or bad.
Second question, so why do we know it's email? Are we just doing that because it has been done like that forever, or no alternative?
Well, that's a philosophical question. 5 years ago, I had a talk here that email is horrible, and if you want to secure it. And they pretty much did all they could. They did a lot. Everything that they could secure, they pretty much did. And then, of course, I now have Outlook and Thunderbird, and normal emails arrive there. They didn't need extra software. It's a very foundational critique here, and rightly so, but they decided on this because everyone is able to do it, and it just works. And they did a lot with it. And maybe in addition, email is one thing, but if you didn't see it, who is included? One is missing. So the patient, they are not part of KIM, apparently, but what should come now, TI Messenger, and that works on Matrix Messenger basis. So the patient is now included soon with Matrix. So now we have two services.
An internet question. They're asking if there's an explanation why communication has been separated with KIM and everything. Why aren't they putting everything into one system? Is that historically made?
Well, there certainly are historical reasons. So the TIM, the messenger, it's newer. We didn't look at that. KIM and the other are older, and the electronic patient file system, that's not designed for exchanging data. And KIM is meant for that, so you can send over an X-ray quickly. So it's different use cases. Email is not there for archiving things.
Ja. Wir lassen das mal kurz sacken, dann Mikrofon 2 bitte.
Microphone 2.
Namhafte Betreiber von
a connection farm with a big name has been hosting KIM, KIM system malware safety. And how high do you think the risks are using the KIM system without those safety measures.
Well, there is data in there. There could be malware in there. That danger is present, just as with normal email. If you prefer to secure your email with an antiviral program, then it might be sensible to do it with KIM as well. Where does it have to be, on a server or where? That's another question. But not everyone can just send a KIM email. You need access to that, to the TI. It's not impossible for an attacker to get in there. So with all the drugstores and apothecaries, especially in Germany, there are quite a lot of people with access in general, but I don't think it's especially vulnerable here. There is the first spam mail in the KIM. There was a provider who had access, fully official, and he got kicked out because he sent out advertisements for medication via KIM. So spam is already there. Maybe ransomware is joining as well. But that's a central issue. If you have a closed system and they say, well, no, the emails from this system, they are secure, then it's an issue if just one of the doctor's offices is compromised, which can happen, then suddenly you have trusted messages in the system.
Micro 4, no people on Micro 4, that was the camera person. Is any notice what to do when it's not in there, the client?
Well, actually, I didn't really read the terms of service. So I don't know what you have to do when the client is no longer in use. But the hardware, it's pretty obvious. The connector has to be sent back. It's pretty clear in the specifications. It's not enforced, so I have an old connector in my basement. They never asked for it. But it specified all of the things that I have to do. They are specified.
Another internet question. Chat was very happy about the HTML hack. Is it only possible with HTML and plain text, or is there any other restrictions?
It's a very specific question to KIM now. Well, all the magic is in standard email. They fixed it by checking the signature, and whenever it's invalid, then the whole mail is discarded. That's the hack now, or the fix. And the email, so it can be received, has to be digitally signed. So it's still possible that there are some more tricks, but you still need a valid signature now. So in our scenario, that doesn't make any sense, because we use the hack to just pretend to have a digital signature that's valid. And with a MIME, so HTML and plain text is allowed, nothing else. But if we disallow HTML, maybe this is what this is about, we could add 1,000 new lines. So I had to have to scroll a lot, and they would probably not check that. So there's still a lot of hacks with other MIME types. So that was just one trick from our paper. There are other. And we didn't test everything.
Wir warten, was in den nächsten Jahren an Vorträgen von euch noch kommt. Das Mikrofon Nummer 3 nehmen wir noch und wenn ihr schnell seid, auch noch die 1 und dann gut.
Wie sieht es mit der Revocation aus? Ist sie genauso kaputt wie bei der Web-PKI?
Ja, die Revocation. Willst du mitkommen auf ein Bier nachher, oder?
Well, the vocation, do you want to join for a beer later? So the vocation in a web PKI, it can work. There are options we don't have with the email, but it's more an email problem than and came problem.
Last question. So where is the distinction between these and normal emails? So where is the split?
So the systems here also include normal emails, so I can recognize them properly, and that's only the KIM emails. I can't bring normal ones in there. In Thunderbird or Outlook, then that separates. That has to separate it. But what if the email server of my KIM provider receives a normal email? Then they have to separate it.
Thank you very much. Dankeschön für den
tollen
Vortrag.
Thank you for the great talk and.